WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Earlier this week, we talked about what it has been like to go through this pandemic as a person of color. We concentrated on the disproportionate arrests of Black and Latinx people in New York City and across the country and the high infection rates in some communities. Today, we're talking about what it is like in this moment for Asian Americans. Here's one example. This week, when reporter Weijia Zhang from CBS News asked President Trump why he was focusing on the U.S. coronavirus testing capacity when we are still seeing more cases every day and Americans were losing lives, he said this.
Well, they're losing their lives everywhere in the world, and maybe that's a question you should ask China. Don't ask me. Ask China that question, okay? When you ask them that question, you may get a very unusual answer. Yes, behind you, please.
Sir, why are you saying that to me specifically?
I'm telling you, I'm not saying it specifically to anybody. I'm saying it to anybody that would ask a nasty question like that.
That's not a nasty question.
Please go ahead.
Why does it matter?
It is a sad irony that during this month, which is Asian and Pacific American Heritage Month, accounts of anti-Asian discrimination, attacks, and hate crimes are on the rise. While the trigger may be the first outbreak of coronavirus COVID-19 detected in China, the roots of this discrimination are much deeper and more nuanced. You learn a lot about that history in a new five-part series on PBS called Asian Americans. Geeta Gandhabir is an Academy Award-nominated director and producer who is the director and producer of the final episode of the Asian American series, which traces the successes of the Asian American community and the discrimination that the community has faced since 1850. The series aired earlier this week, but you can still stream it at pbs.org. Welcome, Geeta. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us to talk about the rise in racially motivated incidents against Asian New Yorkers is New York City's Human Rights Commissioner, Carmelin Mullallis. Commissioner, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me as well.
So, Geeta, in the final episode of this series, it picks up in the late 70s and early 80s, and the idea of Asian Americans being, quote, perpetual foreigners comes up. What does that mean?
So I think what it means is that Asian Americans, although we have been here since the 1800s, really, since the mid to late 1800s, when the railroad was built and there was a large influx of who are now Chinese Americans, but there was a huge influx at that time. And even though we have been there that long, we are still treated and perceived as foreigners. I think for other immigrant groups who have come in also face prejudice, such as the Irish Americans, Italian Americans. When they first migrated to the country, they were also oftentimes marginalized and discriminated against. However, there is a system of white privilege that allowed them to assimilate into society in a way that Asians could not. There was also legislation put in place that banned Asians from migrating for many, many years, the Chinese Exclusion Act. And that also has kept Asian Americans on the margins and not allowed for assimilation in the way, or did not until it was revoked, I should say, in the 60s, or a little bit earlier, but again, in stages up until the 60s. So I think Asian Americans have faced unique challenges based on that. And while a young woman that I spoke to who, through this, talked about the fact that her ancestors had been in the country since the 1800s, but when people looked at her, they still see the face of a foreigner, and oftentimes asked her if she spoke English. So I don't think that is, again, a unique conundrum that we face as Asian Americans.
How do you see this? You just gave us a great historical rundown. How do you see that idea in play today in 2020?
I think a common thing that happens, again, through history, history tells us, and if we don't learn from history, we are unfortunately doomed to repeat it. But history tells us that every time a society is faced with a crisis or, you know, a great challenge, that oftentimes certain groups are scapegoated for that, and the fingers are pointed at them as being the root of the problem. This happened. We saw, and this is oftentimes too encouraged or dictated by leadership. We saw this happen in Nazi Germany, where Jews were scapegoated, and then a genocide took place. We see this within this effort in the Asian American community. This has happened previously. It happened around the time, you know, again, the late 1800s, early 1900s, when the Chinese Exclusion Act was put into place. There were actually sort of these terrible, this sort of mass attacks on Chinese American citizens, and they were, or forgive me, they may not have been citizens at that time, they were not allowed citizenship, but on Chinese Americans, and they were attacked, there were lynchings. They were blamed for an economic downturn at that time. Apparently, they were seen to be taking jobs away from Caucasian Americans. So this, again, we are seeing echoes of that today. I think we are faced with a global pandemic, which a major crisis. The economy is in terrible downturn, and scapegoating is sort of an unfortunate but age-old tool and tactic that comes into play. Again, oftentimes with it can be through misuse of the media. It can also be through misinformation, and then oftentimes we have leaders in place who help foment the sort of hatred, and we're seeing that today.
Commissioner Malalas, let me bring you into the conversation. When did we start to see an increase in harassment aimed at Asian Americans in New York?
You know, I think what we need to look at, too, is where we started seeing some of the stigma attach. As, you know, as Geetha was talking about the cyclical nature of the discrimination and harassment. And I just want to say, congratulate Geetha on that, on the great work, the PBS series. I'm as we're homeschooling, I've been watching snippets of it with my children at lunchtime. And just to bring this home, too, you know, my 7-year-old, as we watched the first episode that was talking about the Chinese Exclusion Act, my kids are very aware of what I do in the world and what I do in New York City. My 7-year-old commented, Mommy, that's happening right now, isn't it?
Wow.
So I start with that and start with the stigma that attaches, because, you know, well before any of the stay-at-home orders took effect, we saw that people were starting to veer away from accessing the Asian community areas of New York City, including the Chinatowns, the areas in Flushing, the areas in Sunset Park. And we had to remind folks that, you know, associating this pandemic or this illness with solely Asian folks or Chinese people is undermined by the science here. And it like what we've seen in the past, people kind of have taken this easy way out of scapegoating this one people, this one race of people. When we look at the claims that have come into the Commission on Human Rights in the last 3 months, just from February to April of this year, and we compare that to the number of claims of the similar type of claims, especially looking at anti-Asian discrimination-related claims, the comparison is staggering. Looking at this year, there have been 121 claims of anti-Asian racism called into the commission. If I look at that same period just from last year, it was 9. So that really tells you that what is happening, the rhetoric at the federal level, what we are seeing happening today with Asian Americans and Chinese Americans, specifically in many instances, being scapegoated for this, has had a real effect on our communities.
My guests are Geeta Gandhavir. She's producer of the final episode and director of the final episode of Asian Americans on PBS. And we're also speaking with New York City's Human Rights Commissioner, Carmelin Mallalas. So, Commissioner, how have community organizations responded to the rise in harassment and attacks?
You know, one, I think what is great is coming together to make sure that they are coordinating and partnering with government agencies like mine so that their communities get the information they need to avail of the resources they need during this time. We oftentimes get the question, you know, how do immigrant New Yorkers, how do folks from different communities, different language, different languages avail of our services? One of the things that I think was very important to me as an Asian American in taking on this role, in 2015, was making sure that our agency was very accessible to the different communities that make up New York City. So we speak over 30 languages at our agency, and we really leverage that, especially at this time, so that we do, you know, sometimes town halls in coordination with these different CBOs or community groups where we might be doing them in Mandarin, or maybe we'll do them in Korean or Tagalog or other languages. We have been really upping our bystander intervention trainings because there are also situations where New Yorkers are witnessing acts of discrimination or harassment occurring right in front of them. And you know, I really think that most of us are good people at heart, and we're thinking to ourselves, as this is occurring in front of us, what do I do? How do I take action? You know, how do I stop this terrible thing from happening? So we have really upped our bystander intervention training to educate people on how they could safely intervene in these situations and also report to agencies like ours, if it's a hate crime-related issue, to the police department, so that we can actually document that this is occurring in the city.
Geeta, in your episode in the series, we see a bit of the history of the rise of activism in various Asian American communities. And specifically, it's a horrible story. I know a lot of people remember it, but for people who don't, Vincent Chin was murdered in Detroit in 1982, and it really became a rallying point for the Asian American community and activism. Can you explain how?
Sure. So we were fortunate enough to speak to Helen Zia. She's an amazing journalist and activist who was present in Detroit during that time period. And Helen came out of, I think it's really important to talk about the history of the activism, because Helen is someone who came out of the movement that happened in on the West Coast in the 60s, which is detailed in the previous episode. There was a student movement. And so her training came from that, from this activist movement there. It was about students organizing. They wanted an Asian studies program, and they were paired with black activists. So there was incredible allyship, and sort of the dream of a rainbow coalition of black, brown, Asian folks working together. So I think, again, towards civil rights and furthering our causes. So Helen came out of that movement and was in Detroit at the time and was one of the key players, among others, in organizing the community. Now, the community in Detroit at the time she describes as fairly small and also not as conscious in the way that the community on the West Coast was, really folks who have been trying to keep their heads down in what was an onslaught of sort of hatred and discrimination around Japan at that time. So Vincent Chin, ironically, a young Chinese man, was, mistaken for being Japanese, and that's what led to him being murdered. So, but Helen Zia, I think what she found was that this murder horrified the entire community, and she was able to draw them together. And there was support. We always have to talk about this. There was support from other communities as well. The African American community stood up as well. There was allyship. And I think that she was really able to raise a pan-Asian movement. It was one of the first of its kind at that time. Oftentimes she talks about how even though there were different groups, there were Japanese, there were Chinese, there were Vietnamese, people were fairly segregated into their, to groups by language, by culture and by the origins of their home country. And this movement united people. I think that they had seen, I think because of the impact of Vincent Shen having been a young Chinese man mistaken for Japanese, the idea that it could be any one of us or anyone we love, you know, for the community was really powerful. And it changed legislation. You know, this was really, it was really an important case, even though, unfortunately, his murderers never served a day in prison. It still had a lasting, resounding impact.
My guests are producer-director Geeta Gandabir. She produced and directed the last episode of The Asian Americans from PBS. We're also joined by New York City's Human Rights Commissioner, Carmelin Mullallas. Commissioner, this might seem like a really obvious question, but what constitutes a hate crime in New York City?
Well, you know, this is a great question because there are different ways that hate incidents are treated under our laws, right? There are hate crimes, which are essentially dealt with in the criminal legal system, and those sort of incidents could be reported to and are handled by the police department, the NYPD and DA's offices. Then there are also civil claims of discrimination and harassment. Those are the types of claims that my agency handles, and there could be overlapped with, you know, an incident that could also be considered a hate crime. But we can also look at things much more broadly. So even if the police is not investigating an incident as a hate crime, it still may constitute a civil discrimination claim under our law. The remedies are, of course, also very different. So in the hate crime area in the criminal legal system, there's usually the types of remedies are, you know, fines or liberty issues. So if the incident was egregious enough, a liberty issue might be at stake. In my area, in my system, a liberty issue is never at stake because we're dealing with, again, civil remedies. So we could be talking about money damages that go to somebody who was the victim of discrimination or harassment. That could be in the form of emotional distress damages, back pay, front pay, other types of economic damages. We have also been very active in ordering more restorative remedies that go back into different communities when they're experiencing discrimination or harassment. And in our system, we also have the ability for deterrent effect to levy civil fines of up to $250,000 per discriminatory act. Now, also, there might be hate incidents, things that people experience that do not fall into the category of hate crime and also do not fall into the category of a violation of our law. But I still tell everyone, please report the incidents. You know, there are still so many people who doubt that there's any such thing as anti-Asian racism or anti-Asian harassment. I say this with the memory of being a child, being called Ching Chong and being chased and told to go back to Puerto Rico. I say this as a commissioner of human rights, knowing that there are these incidents being reported into our agency. And we need to find ways in government and working with communities and organizations that we are addressing this type of discrimination and harassment when we're not in a time of pandemic. Where do we put that funding? What kind of educational issues do we need to address? How do we actually address the underlying racist sentiment that we're seeing expressed in a time of crisis?
There's a track of racially motivated incidents on the Stop AAPI Hate website. And so far, it's received more than 1,700 reports that have occurred in 45 states and the District of Columbia. Commissioner, what should someone do if they want to report in New York City?
You know, folks can call 311. They can ask for human rights. They can reach the Commission on Human Rights directly at 212-416-0197. Just the reminder that immigration status is never something we ask about. It is never something that affects somebody's claim. And in fact, in New York City, violations of our law are included if somebody is being treated differently or harassed because of their actual or perceived immigration status. There's also a lot of information that we have on our website at www.nyc.gov/stopcovidhate. We want people to get involved in reporting incidents that are happening to them, that they're seeing or observing in their communities, and also to be educated and edified in how to deal with those situations with some of our workshops and trainings.
And Geeta, before we wrap, I want to ask you, if someone's watching your episode, this last final episode, is there one particular thing in the episode you think you would really love people to pay attention to, one person you spoke to, one moment?
Oh my gosh, that's a really challenging question, because the entire episode, working on the entire episode, was like, you know, getting a master's degree from all these brilliant people that I met.
I know, but you always have this one sentence or one interview. There's always one interview or one sentence that stays with you. I don't care if every journalist I've ever spoken to or thing I've worked on, it's like, oh, that one thing just sticks with you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So let me think. On the spot, I would say that definitely I would say that interestingly, I think the piece, even though I spoke to Hari Kondabolu, who is a incredibly wise comedian, which I find that often to be a great comedian, you have to be very smart too. But he talked about post 9/11 and essentially what it means to be, what it meant to be South Asian post 9/11 and how you are victimized twice. And I think that that is something that there's a double consciousness. He mentioned that, like everyone else, you are afraid of terrorism. You are afraid to ride the train. You are afraid of, you know, the repercussions of what it means to live in a post 9/11 world, just as a human being. But then you also have to deal with the reality that your country essentially is looking at you as a criminal. And I think this is, and for him, it was like his awakening.
Right.
It's the first time he'd experienced that as a, forgive me, I think that's something on my phone, but it was the first time he'd experienced it as a South Asian person. And I think this is the reality of many African Americans. This is the reality that so many communities who are marginalized or face discrimination have to live in on a daily basis. And I think we as Asian Americans need, again, with our own awareness of that, need to make sure we create solidarity amongst us and move forward together.
My guests have been Geeta Gandhabir and Commissioner Carmelin Mullallas. Thank you so much for joining us and for this conversation.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.